Are Kyrie and James Harden going to sign their extension?
His trade value is not there. And when you hear reports...
Phil has been paid $16 million of his $33 million salary.
I know about people that have certain clauses
what
in their contract.
What happens next year with Giannis Antetokounmpo? He will be eligible for a Supermax next summer. If he re-signs, a new reality is the players are going to move around. And the players are not going to want to spend their whole, you know, life...
And because they didn't want to go into the penalty of the luxury tax, they traded James Harden. Somebody's going to be making $50 million a year.
He probably could have made a little bit more money this summer in free agency.
I think he could have got a lot more in the offseason. You got a chance to secure the bag.
What's going on, party people? I am your host, Steven Bagel. This is another episode of the Bird Rights Podcast. I am here. We are actually doing a crossover episode on Round Ball Rambles feed as well. Maybe a bonus episode somewhere else as well. Because as you guys know, it's Corbin Ford, host of Round Ball Ramble, host of a whole bunch of things right now of what he's doing. So, Corbin, how are you doing today?
You know, Steven, I miss talking basketball with you. I'm doing great. I'm doing great right now. So, well, I can't complain. Talking ball.
You could thank Joe Cronin and Damian Lillard and the Trailblazers organization, because now we have, you know, something to talk about. So, emergency pod. That was the sirens going off.
There we go.
We get, I forget whether it was Woj or Shams first, but either way, it was Wednesday afternoon, if I'm remembering correctly, when it went down, that Damian Lillard has been traded to the Milwaukee Bucks, which I wouldn't say they were like the dark horse of all dark horses. It's like, okay, they don't really have the young assets or the draft picks to make a trade work. Trade ends up being Damian Lillard to the Bucks, Drew Holiday, DeAndre Ayton, Tumani Kamara, pick swaps in 28 and 30, and a first-round pick in 29 unprotected to the Blazers. And the Suns get Jusuf Nurkić, Nasir Little, Keon Johnson, and Grayson Allen. So, obviously a lot to break down.
A little bit.
Let's start with who didn't make a deal. That's the Miami Heat. That's the Toronto Raptors. Those were the two speculated teams that seem to be the front runner of the Damian Lillard sweepstakes. Miami, it seems like they haven't even talked in weeks about it. It just seemed like, oh, we don't have enough. Okay, we're out. And they didn't really try to rope in a third team. I don't really think it really got that far. Toronto, meanwhile, I just had Ez Barahany on from our mock trade deadline last week, actually, right before it was announced or speculated that Toronto is the front runner for Dame. He was on literally, I think, the day before. And we were talking about how the Raptors just, you know, kind of need a retool, probably trade Siakam, maybe trade OG if you're not going to re-sign him. And, you know, they already let Van Vliet walk, but they gave up the first-round pick for Jakob Poeltl at the same time. So it's like Toronto, I suppose it kind of made sense, but they weren't also in a position where it totally was like a seamless fit anyway to acquire Dame Lillard.
Yeah.
Milwaukee makes a lot more sense. What was your initial reaction when this trade went down, when you first saw it?
I was shocked. I really thought it was going to be Dame to Miami some way. I felt that the leverage, you know, that Miami had, I mean, other teams wanted Dame, but the leverage that Dame kind of, I guess, flexed or attempted to flex, and now we're learning more behind the scenes that there was more involved, just led it to a matter of when, but not if, right? So Milwaukee coming out of it totally out of the blue, especially since I'm still a little bit of a basketball romanticist, and you have a guy in Drew Holiday the day before the trade saying, hey, listen, I want to retire as a Milwaukee Buck, all the things. I'm like, yeah, they're going to keep the core together, give one more year, and then blow things up. And then, boom, no, the Bucks wasted no time. So shocked was one thing. I think the balance of the power in Eastern Conference definitely shifted. Boston, I already had question marks before with the acquisition of Kristaps Porzingis, just how that would work together. The availability of himself with the Robert Williams, with a 38-year-old Al Horford, and just how that would work alongside Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, all of that. And then Miami, I mean, clearly were already losers in the offseason before missing out on Dame. So there was a few, I mean, I think there was a few question marks in the East already, but now that's all been answered, you know, health permitting, with Damian Lillard going to the Bucks. I just didn't see this as the move that was going to happen. The Suns getting involved was interesting. Obviously, that gave another interesting piece for Portland, which helped them to, you know, facilitate this trade. But yeah, I think the first thing I have to say was pure shock. I was like, whoa. And I figured it was probably Drew gone, because I didn't even, when I heard Dame to Milwaukee, I'm like, I'm pretty sure they're keeping Chris Middleton. You know, Giannis obviously staying there. It has to be Drew, but whoa. you know, and I'm still kind of there. Looking at it now, it makes a little more sense. I think that, you know, the Bucks sacrifice a little bit of depth, especially, you know, defensive guard depth, if you will, in order to get Dame, but the clear upgrade. I mean, Dame is just a better player. And that's no disrespect on Drew, who is a damn good player himself, but it just shows there's levels to it, and I'm still kind of reeling from it.
So the person I feel most bad for in this situation is definitely Mike Budenholzer. I mean,
really?
So can't you, like, imagine this Milwaukee Bucks lineup, okay? You have Dame, who makes his money by drawing double teams coming off of screens. You can no longer do that to Dame. So he's either going to not be getting double teamed off of screens and either getting wide open 30-footers or driving to the basket, or he's going to have Giannis as the pick and roll or Brook Lopez as the pick and pop, and you're getting great shot. I mean, the offense is going to be a thing of beauty. It's something that I envision Mike Budenholzer thriving coaching in.
Mm.
See, I don't know enough about Adrian Griffin as a head coach to know what type of system he's going to implement. So he's a first-time head coach. So there's always question marks about that.
Absolutely.
But I am very excited to see, you know, the dynamic of who do you leave open? Because here's my dark horse for that starting lineup. Everyone's asking who the fifth starter is going to be now that Grayson Allen is gone.
Yes.
I have Brook at the five. You're going to have Giannis probably at the four, unless you decide to start Bobby Portis as well, which I don't think you do, because I don't think you start three bigs in today's NBA.
No.
So it's Giannis at the four, Dame at the one, and Middleton either at the two or the three. So who is the other wing starter? Could it be Jay Crowder? I think he might make sense.
I think he makes sense.
I think Pat Connaughton makes a little bit of sense. He's similar to Grayson Allen.
Point of attack at the guard.
My dark horse for the starting five? Northern Iowa's own A.J. Green. Rookie was on a two-way last year. That dude is a lights-out shooter. If you put a lights-out, let's just say, you have Dame with the lights-out shooter with Middleton, Brook, and Giannis, who do you leave open if you want to double-team Dame or Giannis?
I mean, I will say this. The answer to that question is nobody. Like, you have to stay home, right? That's the thing you have to do. My problem is, where is the defense at that front? You're putting a lot of stress on both Giannis and Brook Lopez, because, like, Dame, when engaged, like, you know, is a decent defender, but he's a decent defender when engaged, right? He's still going to have a large offensive load, going to be helped out demonstrably by Giannis. But, like, between him, I mean, Pat Connaughton's okay. I don't know AJ Green's level of defense, but, like, none of that looks like okay when you're playing, I don't know, a team with an explosive backcourt. Let's say the Dallas Mavericks. Not even explosive backcourt, but a backcourt that can hurt you in different ways. I mean, Kyrie's a problem in general. Luka's a matchup nightmare in general. Like, you're putting a lot of stress on your backline defense, I think, if you flex that way. Like, yes, A.J. Green, if you bring that offensive boost, you are committing to saying we are going to score 130. In defense, you know, if Giannis and Brooks in the area, beware. But I just, that's the question I ask you. Where does that come from?
So, if I'm coaching the Milwaukee Bucks, they already play a drop defense with Brook Lopez defending the rim as is. Giannis defended the pick and roll just about more than any player in the NBA last year, despite being a big man. Giannis could handle those pick and roll ball handlers. He's that versatile. If, you know, they're not really doing pick and roll, you want to have Giannis. Let's say they're playing, I don't know, Sixers are a bad example, but I'm thinking of a team that has two good, like, twin tower type guys. Denver doesn't really fit the mold either, but let's just say they're going against Jokic and Michael Porter Jr. or something. And Brook Lopez defending the rim. Obviously, Jokic is his primary assignments. And then you want to stick Giannis on Michael Porter Jr. I think Chris Middleton could adequately defend, like, a Jamal Murray type. Again, Jamal Murray is going to get his regardless.
And this even after Chris Middleton's knee injuries. Like maybe he's more engaged defensively because less of an offensive load. I think you're right. He's a guy who stands to benefit and can use more of his, you know, energy in that way. But don't you think some of his mobility, you know, for a guy in his, what, I'd say just before mid-30s, with those knee injuries, is going to be less, a lot of pressure to be like, okay, Chris, bring us home. You know what I mean? I mean, not bring us home, but defensively to be a responsible guy. I mean, I guess he has to be. They don't have another player capable of fitting that. But I just wonder if that, like, do you have any worries about that?
I have worries, but I think if I have one of the two of the five best rim protectors in the league, but Brook being one of the five best rim protectors in the league, and Giannis being just about the most versatile defender that could cover guards or bigs or wings, I think those two alone, with the minutes Jay Crowder is going to play off the bench, with the minutes that Marjan Beauchamp, if he could take a leap, plays off the bench, I think you're okay. I mean, and this team's going to look different in the playoffs. You don't think they're going to make a move at the deadline? Of course they are. So I think they'll be able to address that at a later date as well. But I don't know. I think perimeter defense is important, but it's not the end all be all either. I think with Giannis and Brook in tow, you're going to have a top 10 defense regardless.
Okay. No, I mean, that's true. I mean, Giannis, all world defender. Brook Lopez was in the defense player of the year race last year. So I get that. I just feel like that's a lot to say, especially since both, like you said, are playing drop. And I don't know Adrian Griffin's defensive strategy. Maybe he's more aggressive defensively. I think he might be more so in how he pursues that than, you know, Budenholzer was. Now, whether that's a good or bad thing because of, you know, the fact that the personnel's definitely different now, I'm not sure. And it stands to say that Jrue Holiday did take a step back as a defender last year. But even Jrue Holiday taking a step back as a defender is still miles better than Dame, right? But I get you. I don't think it's going to stop them from being one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference, if not the best team in the Eastern Conference. Actually, let me rephrase that. I don't think it's going to stop them from being the best team in the Eastern Conference, if not one of the best teams in the NBA.
Okay. The Milwaukee Bucks. We are going to get to potential Jrue Holiday trade destinations in a little bit to see, you know, will they sack up? Because I think in Vegas, Boston is actually the favorites to land Jrue Holiday, if I'm not, like, the betting favorites.
Interesting.
So we'll talk about that. But let's move on to the Portland Trail Blazers aspect of it. It was Jake Fisher reported sometime last week, friend of the pod, Jake Fisher, by the way. He reported that the Portland Trail Blazers wanted DeAndre Ayton. Like, this Jusuf Nurkić for DeAndre Ayton, three-team in a Dame, that's been in the works with regardless of who the third team would have been that Dame went to. They've had their eye on him, and they acquire him. As much as I'm happy for DeAndre Ayton, because I think, you know, he just needed a change of scenery, I mean, he didn't choose to re-sign in Phoenix. He signed in Indiana. He chose to get out of there because he wasn't happy in Phoenix. He didn't like Monty Williams. Obviously, Monty Williams is gone now, but I think he's closer to the DeAndre Ayton we saw in the 2021 finals than the DeAndre Ayton we've seen since. And I think that's why he needed a change of scenery. Now, I think if any coach would have been able to unlock DeAndre Ayton in Phoenix, it would have been Frank Vogel because he's a defensive mastermind. But I'm excited to see the young core of Scoot Henderson and Anthony Simons and Shaedon Sharpe and DeAndre Ayton, and for now, Jeremy Grant's probably that fifth starter, pending what they get for Jrue Holiday. So, I'm excited for Ayton. I mean, he's a walking 20-10. Like, I'm not a big just look at stats guy, but 20-10 means something to me. Even so, DeAndre Ayton, if he could figure it out defensively, which I think he could be more balled in, having a more central feature role where he could be more of the guy, at least this year and next year, until Scoot Henderson is really ready to, you know, be the number one on that team. I think, again, I was very excited for DeAndre Ayton to try to figure it out with Frank Vogel, but I think this is okay for him. My other caveat before you talk about Ayton is the Bucks. Yeah, if you're Joe Cronin, would you rather take a Milwaukee 28-30 swap, which is unprotected and could be great, because by then Dame is probably retired, Giannis is 34, 35, 36 years old, and an unprotected, you basically have three unprotected picks from them, assuming you're better than they are at that point. Like, if Milwaukee bottoms out by 2028, you have three premium, potentially top five, top 10 lottery picks. That's something that no one's talking about. Like, if Miami gave the two first in a swap and Tyler Hero, sure. But Miami always finds a way to get a guy. Like, everyone talks about, oh, the Lakers 27 and 29 first were so valuable. No, they're not. Because the Lakers are always going to find a way to bring in a star. So those picks are not. Milwaukee is a smaller market where, yes, if Giannis is 34, 35, 36 years old at the time, and Dame is retired, those picks might be real damn good. If they suck by 28, you have 28, 29, and 30 to dangle, to work with. That's very valuable. Picks that fell out in the future from a small market team are very, very, very valuable.
Yeah.
And that's before we factor in what the Blazers are going to trade for Jrue Holiday, which we'll talk about next.
That's true.
Blazers got significantly more than what I was anticipating. Because, like, Miami didn't have that much. Toronto had a lot, but not that much. I think by the time this Jrue Holiday trade goes down, the package in itself, the totality of circumstances, is going to be substantial.
No, I think you're right. I think that Portland definitely, I mean, they surprised me with their return. Because like I said, I thought they need to kind of give in to Lillard and Miami's kind of demands for a partnership. I figured that's what had to be done. Now, the fact they got a good young center, you know, what, he's still like five years older or so than like a Scoot or a Shaedon Sharpe, but he's still young. You know, that's not going to even factor in until like, you know, 5-6 years down the line. Even then, he's still going to be a very productive center in his, what, late 20s to early 30s. Like, that's going to be fine. You know, also the Blazers got potential draft help down the road, like you said. And we're going to talk about this, but Jrue Holiday, even at 33, right, for Portland to have him right now, it's going to be a lot better for Portland to go and shop him and get a contender or a wannabe contender to say, you know what, Jrue Holiday's our piece, than to try to make that same offer with $120 million owed to Tyler Hero, saying, you know what, he could be your missing piece. Like, there's levels to this, right? Tyler Hero, great player, you know, good potential, but he's not Jrue Holiday. He hopes to have the impact that Jrue Holiday has right now, right? There's just a difference there. So I think this is a great initial return for Portland. And like you said, it's not even done yet. Like, I would give them a B as is, and that's with an incomplete, because let's be real. I mean, there's not a chance that Jrue Holiday is going to be playing a game for the Portland Trailblazers. In fact, there's been reports saying he's probably going to be moved before Monday, more than likely. That's what reports have said. So we'll see. Point is, like, he is rerouted and Portland is getting more assets back to recoup for the value of Jrue Holiday. So you make a trade for a player who was dead set on going one place, where your trade possibilities were quote-unquote diminished because you only had one potential legit partner to work with. And now, not only have you taken back a decent return with a guy in, you know, DeAndre Ayton, who I'm still very high on, although he called himself dominating, I'm not too high on that. But you have a player like that, and you have draft picks that are going to feel good, because let's be real, Milwaukee is not the free agent destination that Miami is. They just aren't. They've had Giannis for like 10 years now. Giannis is a star for the last like five, right? And the big acquisitions they've acquired have been through trade. There's not been a big player saying, I'm going to go to Milwaukee, right? It's always been trade for Jrue Holiday, trade for Damian Lillard. So in like 5 years' time, yeah, I don't think Dame will be in the league in like 7 years, right? So 5 years' time, who knows where Giannis is? We know where Dame will be. The Blazers are probably, I mean, not the Blazers, the Bucks are probably bottoming out, and that pick is looking real nice.
Those picks, the swap, looking real good. I think it was Keith Smith from Spotrac who tweeted and said, pick swaps are nothing until they're something. And I think this is a situation where I think it very well, they could be nothing, but most likely they will be something.
You said it. I would completely agree. I mean, and they flip-flop so much. I think we even saw with the Lakers and the Pelicans over the last couple of years, right? Like what it looked like it might be, and then what it ended up being, and even the little dance this past year where the Lakers were the dead last in the West, and you know, New Orleans was at the top of the conference, and they had a chance of possibly getting, like you said, it doesn't matter until it does. And I really think that this one will matter, though, because all due respect to Milwaukee, they're not the Lakers. You know, I mean, they do have a savvy front office and good ownership, so we'll see what happens. But I'm willing to put my eggs in the basket that 7 years from now, you know, I'm gonna have myself a top tier lottery pick, or at least the potential of one.
Yeah, between the three. Like, let's say Milwaukee's not totally out at 28. 2028 when Giannis is 34 years old, they're still a little competitive. But let's say 29, you start falling off. Then by 30, they're not a lottery team. Then all of a sudden, okay, at least you got one bite at the apple, like whatever.
Exactly. You got a crack at it.
So according to Bet Online, here are the odds for Jrue Holiday's next team. The favorites are the Boston Celtics at 5-2. Second is the Miami Heat, 3-1, which it would be so ironic if Miami offers the same package to Portland that they offered for Dame to get Jrue Holiday. I think that would be hilarious. So
it would be quite funny.
We're going to break down each one of these in terms of, you know, what the packages will look like. But Toronto is number 3 at 4-1. Clippers are at 5-1. Warriors are at 11-2. Sixers are at 13-2. And then Bulls and Jazz are on here at 7-1 and 10-1, respectively. Let's talk about these first Sixers. I think they're the real six teams that make the most sense for Jrue. Boston Celtics. They have, theoretically, up to 5 tradable first. They have their own. They have the 24, 26, 28, and 30. And Golden State's 24 that they got from Memphis for Marcus Smart. So if they really wanted to, they could outbid any teams. And let's talk about maybe the Knicks and the Nets, too. They're not on here, but I think those teams also could potentially make sense. But Boston, figure what? Malcolm Brogdon, Robert Williams, and 2 first-round picks. How good does that make Boston? Does that put Boston above the Milwaukee Bucks hierarchy with Dame?
Listen, what that does is set up, I think, regardless of what move is done, I think it sets up a playoff series where Jrue Holiday plays Milwaukee.
As a Sixers fan, I don't know.
To answer your question, though, yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting because, I mean, Robert Williams, I love the potential he brings. And defensively, he is a game changer for Boston. Let's be real. Al Horford, still very good defensively. Also going to be 38. Like, that's a legit thing. Kristaps Porzingis, decent rim defender. He is. But injury plagued. Like, his healthiest season was, what, last year, I think? So, like, just the healthiest season in a couple of years, at least, was last year. I just think that's a huge hit to your backline defense. At the same time, now your guard depth is nasty. I mean, if you put out a 3 of Holiday, Brown, and Tatum, just nasty. You know what I mean? And Holiday is a perfect ancillary offensive player who can kind of get you into your set, kind of get out the way, can have big offensive nights, but especially when they're allowing him to do that, that's even better because it does, you know, let him be the kind of star in his role alongside a Tatum and a Holiday. I like that. I really think that's nice. Robert Williams would probably have to be the piece. And also if you're Portland, that's interesting because like, Robert Williams and Ayton? Like Ayton, I feel like is clearly the better player in my mind. I mean, I guess you take that, you bring him in and you figure it out from then. I'm not really sure how that works, right? But if you're Portland, it's a decent offer. If you're Boston, I do think that it definitely catapults you a little bit. I think it does. Just having an impact player of Jrue Holiday's caliber, we saw what he did in Milwaukee. Now you have him with the better surrounding talent in Boston, because let's be real, in my mind, Tatum and Brown are better. Then I'd say the collective. Actually, let me not get too hot takey here. I am just going to say I'm very high on Tatum and Brown. And with Jrue Holiday there, he can kind of help them, kind of shore up their weaknesses, play to their strengths. They can help him out as well. I think that makes him scary. Does it make them better than a Dame Giannis? Yikes. Because now you've lost your Giannis kind of role defender in Robert Williams. But you have a better player to put on Dame in Jrue Holiday. So, I mean, it's interesting. That's interesting.
On paper, a team of Jrue, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Al Horford, Kristaps Porzingis, with Derek White as your sixth man, might beat the 72-10 Chicago Bulls.
Thank you, Steven. Thank you. Because your comedic timing was perfect. You held it for a minute. I said, has he lost his mind? Okay.
But no, you see what I mean? On paper, that is the deepest top six in the NBA.
Yeah, that was a good one. Oh, my God. Yes.
So then let's talk about the Miami Heat. Let's say they get Jrue Holiday for basically the same package they offer, the 2 first, Nikola Jovic, and let's say they flip Tyler Hero to, let's say, Utah. And Utah throws a first-round pick with salary filler. So then Portland essentially would be getting 3 first-round picks and Nikola Jovic for Jrue Holiday. Holiday goes to the Heat. and then whatever salary fill, whatever it is. And then Hero goes to the Jazz. Mm-hmm. Something like that I could envision. I wouldn't hate it. Miami, I don't know. I just think, because Miami lost two starters, and no one's factoring that in. They're a massive loser so far. I think Miami is almost as desperate as the Sixers to find a way to acquire Jrue Holiday, and we'll talk about the Sixers. But if Miami doesn't get Holiday, they lost Gabe Vincent, they lost Max Strus, all of a sudden, their depth took a huge hit this offseason because they kind of put all their eggs in the Dame basket and they struck out and missed. Yeah. I think Miami needs to find a way because all of a sudden they have Drew, Shooter, X, let's say Duncan Robinson, Drew, Duncan, Jimmy, Bam, Caleb Martin as your starting five with Kyle Lowry as your sixth man. You're cooking with fire, I'd say. I don't think you're on the Boston. I don't think you're on the level of Boston or Milwaukee, mm-mm, but I think it's intriguing for sure. Drew in Heat culture, I would love.
Yeah. Drew with the Heat would be nice. I honestly think that that's probably, in my mind, that's why I'm like, Boston's interesting that they're the favorites. I feel like Miami could just take the same offer, throw it out there, and now you got the picks. You have the premier player you wanted. You know, maybe you can... I think that would be, I think for a player like Dame, no, that deal didn't work. For a player like Drew, you know, who's going to be, what, basically a one-year deal anyway, potentially. Then you can play with Tyler Hero or Riyadim, whatever the case may be, if you want to do that. I think that's a better fit. Because you could still get all the, I mean, Miami's coming from a place, like you said, they're clear losers. Like, you still have all the leverage over Miami. Like, yes, they're getting a lesser player, and they still have to give you the farm. Because the alternative is saying, okay, our big move this offseason was reuniting with Josh Richardson as the team that made the NBA Finals last year. Like, no, I think you can definitely say, hey, Nikola Jovic, we like him. You know, Jaime Jaquez, let's get him in too. Let's get a couple picks. Let's get a few pick swaps. Tyler Hero, why not? Roll the dice on him. Maybe we'll keep him and we'll have a loaded backcourt and then figure it out, you know, at trade deadline. Maybe we'll take him and immediately see where that goes and involve that in a bigger deal and get more picks back. But I think if you're Portland, I like the potential that's offered there with a Tyler Hero for Jrue Holiday swap. But I don't know. I mean, again, it's one of those things, like you said, like, who gets the best assets? I just think you can rook Miami over even more because they're stuck between a rock and a hard place. They were already losers before this happened. Now they're even worse, right? Look, it's pathetic. You got Jimmy Butler and Tyler here talking about tampering. Like, come on. Like, come on, y'all. So now I feel like Miami definitely has something to make because otherwise, like, they're going to be in, like, that sub-tier East category. I still feel it'll be a very good team, but they've lost. They lost some depth. You know, they lost some star. They lost some of the chance of star power. And what people aren't realizing is that you had a potentially disgruntled Giannis, right? You had a Dame that wanted to be traded. Those two are reunited. Both of those trade options for Miami are gone, at least for the next 2 years. What if Jimmy Butler's like, you know what? I'm out. Like, I want to request a trade because this ain't working for me. Jimmy's done it for less.
Yeah. Let me ask you. The one thing I think the Heat might have on themselves is that I think the Heat's future first would be more valuable than Boston's. Because Boston, I mean, we're talking about picks in 2028, 2030. Boston, Jason Tatum is still only like, what, 31, 32 years old at the time. Like, they still may be an elite NBA team by 28, 2030. Miami, sure, maybe they bring in a guy because they always seem to, but it's no sure thing. So the one thing I do think is that Miami's picks may be better than Boston's picks. But it might be splitting difference at the same time. The next team is Toronto. I don't have a whole lot to say. I think Toronto might have been a sweet place for Dame. I don't think they will be for Jrue Holiday as much as they need a point guard to replace Fred VanVleet. I don't really, you know, envision that being a feasible scenario because then all of a sudden they'll have Siakam, OG Anunoby, and Jrue Holiday all hitting free agency next year with no first-round pick because they'll pick as top six protected to San Antonio and they're not going to be a bottom six team if they get Jrue Holiday. So, catch 22 for them. So then let's talk about the Clippers, Warriors, and Sixers. As big of a nightmare as it would be for the Bucks to get Dame, the Celtics to get Drew, and Sixers to strike out and be stuck with James Harden is already a nightmare in itself. The bigger nightmare for me as a Sixers fan is the Clippers getting Drew. And then who the hell is going to want James Harden? in the scenario, let's say the Clippers do two first with, they have a million expiring contract salary fill. Like, everyone is speculating it would be like Drew to the Sixers, Harden to the Clippers. Each one of those teams, the Clippers send a first, Sixers send a first to Portland, and then whatever expiring salary filler to Portland from the Clippers. One, Clippers probably value Drew Holiday more than James Harden, so why would they help facilitate that when they're going to trade for Drew themselves? And two, Kyle Newbeck from previously the Philly Voice, he's a Sixers beat writer now with, I think, Philly Sports, which is a company that just started around out here. He basically reported there's no traction on that. The Clippers, Sixers, and Blazers three-teamer, there's no traction on it. It's not going to happen. If the Clippers get Drew Holiday, Sixers are going to be stuck with James Harden because no one else is going to want him. So we're going to talk about these teams together in terms of the Clippers and the Sixers. Mm-hmm. In terms of fit, I think Drew Holiday, Tyrese Maxey, and Joel Embiid is a beautiful fit. And I know I just trolled you a little bit with the whole 72-10 Bulls thing. But,
you sure did.
But okay, being serious, what's a better perimeter? I know we talk about perimeter defense a little bit with the Bucks. What's a better perimeter defensive core? Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, and Ron Harper, or a healthy Drew Holiday, Paul George, and Kawhi Leonard? Because that is a conversation.
That is true.
And
that
but is you, true. You know Kawhi is going to miss 20 games. You know Paul George is going to miss 20 games. Whatever. But I'm saying at full strength in the playoffs, which I would probably say the Bulls just because all those guys were in their prime at the time.
Yeah,
as opposed to the Clippers all being in their almost mid-30s now.
Or I even say more in their prime, because if we're talking about the 72-10 Bulls, like all those guys were in their early 30s. I would imagine, I mean, Jordan was 32, 33, you know. Scottie was 31, 32. So I feel like they're actually more comparable than you think. Like all these guys, like they were good, but their prime was like early 90s. Like they were just in their sustained excellence, you know, with the diluted league, with expansion, everything, not, you know, diminishing the greatness of those Bulls teams, but they were an older team. They were just, they. I would say they're comparable to the Clippers. I think you're right. I think the caliber of player in a defender like a Jordan, in a defender like a Pippen, I mean, I would probably put Kawhi in between those two. I'd probably put Paul George just beneath them. Like, if we're, like, ranking those four, man, that's nasty. But you add Drew Holiday in there, maybe so. Maybe so. That's interesting. At least, on, and let's be very specific, we're talking about that core defensively. Like defensively. I think that there's an argument to be made. There's a conversation to be had.
Then let's talk about the Golden State Warriors, as you're the last team. I know, I said maybe the Knicks or the Nets. I think both teams could be in position due to the amount of picks they have. And, mm-hmm. you know, they have salary filler to make it work and whatever. But I don't know.
I don't see Golden State doing it. I'm not going to lie to you. I feel like you don't do – I mean, that hits, in my mind, their – you make a big – it hits, in my mind, them as – they've already did this kind of dance before with D'Angelo Russell. Like, you bring a guy in Chris Paul. You've already had the workout videos. You already have, you know, Draymond Green saying his most important season of my career. I got to win one for Chris Paul. Like, all these things already. And then you immediately flip them. I get it. Like, the opportunity cost is there. But I'm just saying, as a team, knowing your front office was just like, boom. And I get it. Like, Chris Paul had the potential to be moved at the deadline. Like, this was always a thing. I just don't know if that sends a good message. I get it. No one thought it was going to pop up. But you literally, training camp Monday, okay, bye, we're rerouting you with Jonathan Kuminga, which you could do. And it could work, but for the same issues, because you already have the issue with Chris Paul, I think, about with the team, who's going to come off the bench for them, right? Because you need defense. Chris Paul and Steph Curry has a very small defensive backcourt of guys who are actually older. Huh?
Which is why they would trade for Drew.
But the problem is, I get that, but then again, like, I guess you're right. I mean, it's a bad backcourt, but like, at the same time, you get an element with Chris Paul that you would not give Drew Holiday. You also gain an element with Drew Holiday you wouldn't have with Chris Paul. Drew Holiday defensively raises their level, right? Drew Holiday, Andrew Wiggins, you know, Draymond Green, Kevon Looney, that's pretty nasty. That's good for protecting a 35-year-old Steph Curry and a 33-year-old Klay Thompson who's gone off of multiple, you know, extensive traumatic leg injuries. At the same time, if you look at what happened to them against the Lakers, yes, part of that was the fact that they just, you know, defensively weren't up to speed. Jordan Poole was horrible, all of that. At the same time, the Lakers kind of figured out the defense that they used on the Warriors. There wasn't any diversification there. And the sneaky thing about Jrue Holiday the past two postseasons, offensively, not been super great. Not been horrible, but not been super great. At least the idea of Chris Paul gives you an element of a change of pace. He's still all world in the pick and roll. He's still somebody who can help you out and play along as an off-ball shooter and give another layer of diversification to your offense that Jrue Holiday, while being a very good offensive player, I don't know if it's the same. I guess in my mind, if the trade is there and it's 2K or my game basketball GM and you make it, boom. But at the same time, like, I don't know. The optics is something that bugs me. I don't know. How do you feel about Steven? The optics are,
I think when you're a team like Golden State, where you've already won all these rings, and you know you probably have maybe another 2 or 3 year window, I don't care about optics. I'm already paying the biggest. If I'm the owner, I'm the biggest luxury tax bill in NBA history. Back-to-back years, I'm paying. I don't care. I'm trading for Jrue Holiday, and that's the end of it. It's not even a question. Jonathan Kuminga might be nothing. I hate to say it. I loved him as a prospect. He is not developed. If there's a way we could give up a first and Chris Paul and Jonathan Kuminga, I'm doing that 10 times out of 10.
I don't know. That's fair. We talk
about Boston being 6 deep. Imagine Drew, Steph, Clay, Wiggins, Draymond, Looney.
I mean, that'd be pretty good defensively.
You keep Moses Moody. You just drafted Brandon Podziemski. I mean, there's guys there.
You're hoping that Moses Moody takes a leap, which has been slow in coming. You're hoping that Podziemski comes out the gate and is ready to play, which, based off Summer League, I mean, yes, but no. I think that just puts a lot of pressure still on Steph Curry for your offense. Jrue Holiday is a good offensive player. But, like, I still think it puts a lot of creation ability on 35-year-old Steph Curry on a night-in-night-out basis. Like, Jrue Holiday is more capable of making his own shot than I would say a Klay Thompson is. But, like, at the end of the day, crunch time, when it's like that, those guys are dependent on others, you know? And I yes, the boost you get defensively from Jrue Holiday, no argument here. And offensively, it's not that big a step down. It's not like Jrue Holiday's offensive liability, not in the slightest. But I don't know. I guess you're right. Like you said, for me, the optics would be an issue. But like you said, you're trying to win championship and, you know, the title window is closing, then you just go for it, then sure. Does it make them demonstrably better? I mean, let me ask you this. If you get, given where the Warriors were last year, right? Given where they finished, given all of that, do you say, let's say we make a trade and we bring in Jrue Holiday and you trade out, I don't know, Jonathan Kuminga and Chris Paul. Do you look at them as a better team than, I don't know, the Grizzlies?
I think they'll win in the playoffs and the Grizzlies. Grizzlies probably win more regular season games like they did last year.
That's what I mean. So here, I'm going to read the top. Grizzlies, Golden State Warriors ended up sixth, right? Last year. Okay. Make the trade for Jrue Holiday. They're not better than the Nuggets. Maybe better than the...
Are you positive with Jrue Holiday? With what the Nuggets lost between not being able to replace Bruce Brown, with losing, they lost, what's his name, too? I'm drawing a blank. They lost two guys this year in the playoffs.
Jeff Green?
No. They did lose Jeff Green, but no. Either way, that Golden State team with Drew and Steph and Clay, and you're putting Jrue Holiday around the two best shooters in NBA history, who's an elite perimeter defender, elite glue guy connective piece, with Draymond Green, who's also an elite glue guy and defensive piece. Jrue Holiday won 3-time teammate of the year, back-to-back-to-back years. You know Draymond's not going to punch him in the face. There's just so many layers to what that Golden State team could be doing. It's dangerous.
It's dangerous. I say they're better. I put them maybe over the Kings. I don't put them over the Suns. I don't put them over the Lakers. I don't put them over the Nuggets.
I think it's a conversation that they could be the best team in the West. But I also wouldn't. I think you could argue, if this trade happens and he goes to Golden State, I think you could make an argument for Golden State. I think you make an argument for Denver. I think you could make an argument for Phoenix and maybe the Lakers. I think all four of those teams.
Oh, Why the Lakers? Sorry, I'm a Laker fan here. Why could you maybe make an argument for the Lakers? Their
I
bench
like the
got
Lakers
significantly
this year.
deeper. Anthony, thank you. Anthony Davis gave Golden State problems. And making this trade for Jrue Holiday, I still think Anthony Davis gives Golden State problems. I mean, you got to see LeBron James in year 21, but the Lakers
So
got
you want me
deeper.
to drop the maybe? You want me to say that would be the tier end?
Thank you. I would drop the maybe. That's all I'm saying.
But my point is, I think any of those four teams could find a way to make the NBA championship and be the representatives of the Western Conference. I'm saying Golden State could be number one out of those four, but they could be four out of four as well.
Yeah, I can't argue with you on that.
If at this point with your title window closing, you have a chance to be one out of those four, you take the swing. I don't think Chris Paul puts him in the conversation as the best team in the West, but I think Jrue Holiday does.
Wow. Okay. No, I get you. I guess my argument would be I don't think that it changes them much regardless. I think that they're still right in the thick of a very tough Western Conference. Now, I won't argue with you. I think that the addition of Jrue Holiday maybe makes you closer to that, but it's still a question mark, you know? But I get you. I get you. I at this point, Jrue Holiday is a better player than Chris Paul. Easy. I think it's just the role that Chris Paul would play for the Warriors compared to the role that Jrue Holiday would. But I'm with you. I'm with you. I think that it's interesting. That's a Twitter poll. I might think of that Twitter poll. That's a good question.
So the last one, let's quickly talk about the Phoenix Suns before we sign off here. So they basically trade DeAndre Ayton and Tumani Kamara and get Yusuf Nurkic, Nasir Little, Grayson Allen, and Keon Johnson, who apparently one of the two guys they're going to waive.
That seems stupid to me.
The speculation they want TJ McConnell, so I'm thinking maybe. See, here's the thing. DeAndre Ayton is a superior player to Yusuf Nurkic, but Yusuf Nurkic makes half the amount of money. And the issue with the Suns, they basically have four max guys on their books and then 11 minimums. There was no way they could have made a trade for like a mid-tier salary guy like TJ McConnell, for example. Like when the deadline comes, if they want to just upgrade on the margins, you're going to have to trade three or four expiring contracts just to make the salaries work.
There's going to be a lot of 3-for-1s.
So now there doesn't have to be because now they have Grayson Allen's $10 million on the books. They have Nas Little's $7 million on the books. Now you could combine them for $17, $18 million guy, or you could trade either one of them individually for another $10 million, $7 million guy with a few second-round picks attached to it. So that was really the main reason to make the trade. I suppose they thought the downgrade to Nurkic to cut the money in half at what Ayton was making to Nurkic, in addition to being able to be more flexible in terms of making moves around the margins with the mid-tier salaries, that's GM 101. I mean, they want TJ McConnell. Now they could trade Nasir Little and Keon Johnson with a second-round pick. Get TJ McConnell. There's a point guard you have coming off your bench.
That's true.
I like Grayson Allen. I think he's going to be wide open all day, and he's a real 40% three-point shooter on that team. I like him. I like Josh Okogie. I think Josh Okogie and Nasir Little could compete for that fifth starting job with Grayson Allen coming off the bench. I think I like Kade Bates' job. I like Utah Watanabe, Eric Gordon, obviously. Drew Eubanks is going to be Yusuf Nurkic's backup once again.
Yep.
I think Phoenix has done a phenomenal job given what they had to do after acquiring Bradley Beal of filling out this roster.
I would agree. I'm actually going to not say that. I think they did an interesting job of doing it. There was something, I think it was, I'm trying to remember who said this. I think it was Amino Housen. But yes, I think it was Amino Housen. He said that the Phoenix Suns made, outside of Eric Gordon, that they made July 17th signings on July 2nd. I think that's interesting. Like, all these guys, like they're good players, but they're definitely largely dependent on the talent surrounding them. And right now, with a healthy Bradley Beal, a healthy Devin Booker, a healthy Kevin Durant, those look good on paper. But when they're playing off of those guys, I don't think, oh, wow, the Suns are really going to have to rely on 36-year-old Eric Gordon for this stretch of games. Or, oh, okay, Utah Watanabe, we need you to really pick it up here. Like, I don't know how scalable they are to stepping up if and when some of these Suns guys are injured. Unless we just have a miraculous, unanimous, healthy season from all of them. I like all these guys in a vacuum. I don't like any of them, like, to be, I don't know. Let's say you're missing Kevin Durant and any combination of Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, or Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker, any of two of those three are out for extended stretch for whatever reason. We saw Kevin Durant miss.
Nurkic has had injury histories himself the last.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you. Exactly. Like, he's averaged like 30 games the last three seasons or something. All of a sudden, that depth is just players. Like, it doesn't mean they're great players. It just means they're players. And it's good to have bodies. But I'm not like, that's not a great team. That's just not a great team in my mind. Like, again, I think that they did a good job given what they had with the new collective bargaining agreement in terms of filling out their roster. And these pieces are nice pieces. And you look at them and it's like, yeah, like this guy was a good backup for here. And Utah Watanabe had a good, you know, season off the bench for these guys. But like, the role they're going to be playing now is a little bit different in my mind than the role they were playing on their respective teams. They were all backups on different teams of varying levels of dependability. Right. And now, like, they're going to get run regardless, and they might be a lot more, you know, invaluable if or when an injury occurs to one of the Suns' big three, because they are top heavy as hell. And when that happens, or if that happens, all of a sudden, these guys that we're talking about, oh, they have a lot of depth. Now we're relying on them. Hey, can you, Drew Eubanks, can you give me like 15, 16 points? Right. Like, Eric Gordon, can we, you know, turn back time to like 2017? You know, like, all of a sudden, I just feel like these guys have the potential to be overtaxed in their role. So that's why I'm TBD on that. Like, yes, the depth looks good on paper right now. Let's see how this looks in January.
You know, I don't totally disagree, but I think given they went the route of having four max contracts, I think they did the best with what they were able to do with it.
Oh, agreed. Agreed. They didn't really have options.
Now you have that Grayson Allen $10 million. And that Nasir Little $7 million, you could have a package for a guy or trade individually with maybe a minimum to get another small upgrade. Like, I think now that you were able to get off DeAndre Ayton's max, that you wouldn't have been able to flip for, you know, those smaller contract guys.
Mm-hmm.
I think now they set themselves up in position to make one more move around the trade deadline, essentially.
Okay. No, I get that, and that's fair, and I think that's a logical thing. And mind you, I'm not saying that this move isn't better, because it does put them in play to make a better deal to upgrade their roster. I just I guess I'm pushing back against the notion that Phoenix did an amazing job off the gate. I think they did a good job off the gate, and given what they had, yes, they knocked out the park. But I'm not gonna talk about these guys like, oh, like this is like the murderer's row. I think they did an interesting approach in going after players. Usually, you have this big three team construct, you go after players who were really good like 6-7 years ago, right? In this case, they have a lot of up and young guys, a lot of guys who are, you know, varying ages of trying to prove themselves. The only guy who kind of fits that traditional mold of like the aging vet ring chaser who still has something to give possibly is Eric Gordon. Everyone else is really interesting where they fall in the age and player timeline kind of capacity. But I guess that's my one pushback. But no, you're right. Given what they had to do and what they had to work with, if you had, like I said, basketball GM or 2K, and given me the situation where it's like, hey, this is, I have four players, I got to build a roster. It's free agency. I got to build a roster around these four guys. Because remember, they had Aiden at the time. How do I do it? I don't know if, I know I don't do better than that, obviously. But I would be hard-pressed, anyone would be hard-pressed to put a better roster around those four than Phoenix has. Doesn't mean they did an amazing job and it's going to be the greatest one ever. But like, given what they had to work with, they did okay. I'm just not very high on it, personally.
No, I get it. I still think they're in that upper echelon of the Western Conference, though, just because of the star power on the team. So I think they did okay.
Let me ask you this.
Okay.
As it stands right now, did Phoenix get better? Let's say they don't make a move. Let's say they get rid of, I don't like getting rid of Keon Johnson. He was a recent high pick just 2 years ago in the draft. But let's say you do that and you also, you know, move on. I forgot. Oh, I forgot his name. We just mentioned him. The two guys, let's say they move off the two guys. Moving on, right? Keep the roster as is. Did Phoenix get better than they were with Aiden?
I think so. I think that the center position, unless you have a Joel Embiid or Nikola Jokic, is the most expendable. I mean, look at the Warriors with Kevon Looney all these years. I mean, I think that the center position is the most replaceable position in the NBA. And you were talking about the depth after this trade with how it's not the best.
Mm-hmm.
Before this trade, without Grayson Allen and Nasir Little, what did they have?
That's true. That's true. That's true.
Yeah. I think they got deeper. I think they set themselves up to make another move And I think, yes, it was a downgraded center, but that's not the biggest deal in today's NBA. So overall, yes, I do think they got better.
I mean, they didn't get a Jokic stopper. I'm just kidding. There isn't a Jokic stopper.
Yeah. They're going to throw Jusuf Nurkić. No, they're not. Yeah, they're going to try. But it
and he's going to foul out.
36-17-13. It doesn't freaking matter.
Nope. Congratulations. You have 2 points before his season. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So, okay. I mean, I have nothing else in terms of this trade. Do you have anything else to add?
No, I think a lot of it, I want to see if Portland's B goes to an A-plus when the inevitable Drew Holiday trade happens. Definitely want to see if we revisit this in, you know, at midseason, if Phoenix makes a trade with the pieces they got from this deal. And of course, we'll see how Milwaukee looks. But as of right now, no, I think this is a really, I'm glad we got our blockbuster just before media day. Like, they let us wait all offseason. The dog days were legit the dog days with two big names swirling around. And now here we are. But no, I think it's going to be okay. I think we got everything we had to say out, and it was fun to break it down as we do.
We still might get one more trade before media day, at least according to Shams on the Pat McAfee show.
There we go. I hope that they do. I'm off on Monday.
There we go. Perfect. So, okay. You can follow me on Twitter. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Bird Red Spot. You can follow my personal Twitter at @_NBAGELL. That's NBAGELL. Go listen to the One and Done podcast. Whether or not you're a college basketball fan, my co-host Sean Simpson and I have been trying to make it so we make the more casual college basketball fans more knowledgeable. We try to not dumb it down. I don't want to insult any of our listeners, of course, but you know, we try to make it relatable and make it easier to follow than if you're not a diehard college basketball fan, essentially. We just did a film breakdown and an interview with Baylor point guard Ray J. Dennis. That was really cool to have. We have at least 3 more players coming on for film breakdowns and interviews before the season starts on November 5th. So be on the lookout for those. And Corbin, anything you want to plug?
Listen, I appreciate you having me on as always. Look forward to more collaborations and listen to One and Done because I'm trying to get on college basketball with the eye to the draft, of course. But you can follow me on Twitter at CorbinNBA. Check out Roundball Ramble. Check out my other podcast, Roster Reconstruction. Roundball Ramble, we're doing our division preview series. We've already done 2, the Pacific Division with Richard Liu and the Southwest Division with David Williams. In fact, you might hear Steven on, depending on how things work out for a division. So that'll be fun. But aside from that, just ramping up for the season. Check out any work I have coming up for Swish Theory. Hopefully I have some stuff cranking out there soon. Have a podcast / article collaboration in the works to going over the GM tenure of one Phil Jackson, or president of basketball operations tenure, if I will. So that should be interesting. But aside from that, that's all I got. Make sure one more time, check me out at CorbinNBA, CorbanNBA. And as always, Steven, it is a pleasure.
Okay, Corbin and I will talk to you guys each of our next episodes. Thanks for listening, and maybe we'll do this again in a few days with Drew Holiday. We'll see.